Rohinden Mistry is a Canadian novelist who was born in Bombay. He's the author of a book of short stories, swimming lessons, and a novel, A Fine Balance, about four people whose lives intersect in the Bombay tenements. The novel was nominated for the Booker Prize, was an Oprah Book Club selection, and a New York Times bestseller. Now Mistry has a new book, Family Matters, also set in Bombay. In a review of the book in The New Yorker, John Updike writes that Mistry harks back to the 19th century novelists, for whom every detail, every urban alley, every character, however lowly, added a vital piece to the full social picture, and for whom every incident illustrated the eventually crushing weight of the world. Family Matters tells the story of the Vakil family. Nariman Vakil is a widower suffering from Parkinson's who lives with his two stepchildren. After a fall leaves him bedridden, his stepchildren scheme to move him into the cramped apartment of his biological daughter, their half-sister Roxana, which she shares with her husband and two sons. Taking care of Nariman tests Roxana's family's sense of duty, honor, and love, and redefines what family means for them. We begin with a reading from Family Matters. Here Roxana's husband, Yezad, is reflecting on his experience of the long months caring for Nariman.
Yezad returned to his teacup, not sure if Nariman had heard him. Strange trip, this journey towards death. No way of knowing how much longer for the chief. A year, 2 years. But Roxana was right, helping your elders through it. That was the only way to learn about it. And the trick was to remember it when your own time came. Would he wondered. What folly made young people, even those in middle age, think that they were immortal?
Rohinden Mistry reading from his novel, Family Matters. Much of the novel is about family conflicts that arise in caring for an elderly relative. And Nariman has Parkinson's, and his children struggle with the responsibilities of his care, the physical, the bodily details of it. Do you have experience with this? Have you cared for your own parents or in-laws?
No, I haven't. In my own home, my mother's parents lived with us in Bombay. So I watched my grandparents, I watched my friends' grandparents. There's enough around to see and observe and learn from. Well, I should also say that having been brought up in India, you are in much closer contact with grandparents, with the old, the elderly, the sick, than you are in Western society, mainly because there are not as many options as we have here. Old age homes, nursing homes, are only accessible to the very rich. So for the ordinary person, it is almost certain that when his parents or grandparents get old, they will be cared for in the home. There's no escaping it.
Bombay, the city, is almost like a third plot line in the book. And you really, you describe it, you reading the book, you get this sense of what it would be like to be on the street in the city. You can hear the sounds of the street, smell the market as characters walk through the streets. And that's certainly true of your other novel, A Fine Balance. I think I remember reading in that book about all sorts of street scenes, how a cripple moves when navigating the streets, how to load a dead buffalo on a cart, about men who make their living. Is this right? By collecting hair?
By collecting hair clippings. They collect hair and sell it by weight to wig makers and so on.
From the barbers on the street.
Yeah, from barbers and from hair salons. But of course, one character then gets a little more adventurous and does not wait for the clippings to fall. He starts stealing people's hair, clipping them in crowded places. Anyway, that's another book.
No, you grew up in Bombay, but you haven't lived there for, what, over 20 years?
You
emigrated to Canada. In writing so much about the city you left, is that a way to keep it close to you, to treasure it?
It's more a case of the city keeping me close to it and not letting go. It still engages my imagination, and that's why I continue to write about it. And of course, I visit, and people visit from there, and so there's a constant keeping in touch with the city. That helps to keep it fresh. I rely a lot on memory, though, when I write. Memory and imagination.
Growing up in Bombay in the late 50s, the 60s, what was your family's financial situation? Because you write about the tenements of Bombay, but I believe your family was middle class, is that right?
That's right, yeah. But the thing is that life in Bombay is all on display. If you keep your eyes open, you'll see everything. As you take the train, as you take the bus, you'll pass by the windows of people's little flats and apartments in tenements. The streets are narrow, and you can literally look into them and observe how they live, how many people to a room, and how the beds and the bedding is arranged, and how they store their pots and pans. And when you ride the train from the suburbs, you'll see the slums, people living by the train tracks in cardboard shacks and tin shacks. So it's all on display, all on view. And all you have to do is, as I say, keep your eyes open and you'll see it all.
How did you come to emigrate to Canada?
Well, not so much Canada, but the idea of emigrating to the West was the sort of idea that one grew up with, at least in that generation. You constantly heard this when you were a child, that to make a success of yourself, for a better future, for better prospects, one had to leave, one had to go and study abroad and settle in the U.S. or England or Australia or Canada, because that's where you could really make something of yourself, and India didn't offer any opportunities. And that was the story. So you believed it and you grew up, and that's what you tried to do. And if you succeeded, you received the congratulations of all those around you, and they wished you the best in your life, and you found yourself in a foreign country.
So it wasn't a conscious choice, Canada over the U.S. or over
England? Well, when it came
England?
To selecting, yeah, it was a conscious choice at that point. But the original idea of leaving was sort of implanted early on. So when it came time to around 1974, 75, and by that time, England no longer seemed a very attractive place, because we'd been hearing about the race riots in the late 60s and so on. And with the U.S., we'd been hearing all about Vietnam and all of that. And at that time, when I was ready to go or to leave, Canada seemed the most inviting place.
Well, you worked at a bank for a very long time. What, a decade?
Hmm. Yes.
What was your position?
I started as a clerk in the accounting department. I had a degree from Bombay University in mathematics and economics. But of course, I wasn't using any of that mathematics in the accounting department. I was adding and subtracting, basically. And that's where I started. And then by the time I quit 10 years later, I had worked my way up to a supervisor of the customer service department in the credit card department of the bank.
How did you get from banking to writing?
Well, there we have to go back a little to when I started working at the bank. After the first year or so, I very quickly realized that I wasn't going to be happy doing that as a career till I hit 65. And I needed something to make the days more stimulating. My wife and I, both of us, thought about taking evening classes at the university. Still all very tentative, nothing with a career orientation, just to make life more interesting. And since we both enjoyed reading, I mean, I'd always enjoyed reading from the very beginning, the Enid Blyton books, right through to Chekhov and Dostoevsky in my teens and later. Since we'd never had a chance to study literature and philosophy, that's what I decided to take at evening classes at the University of Toronto. Somewhere there, after 2 or 3 years of doing that and enjoying it quite a bit, enjoying the assignments that we had to write, the essays, and some of them quite demanding and taxing, I realized I enjoyed the writing process. And around that time, the books I was reading and rereading sometimes, Chekhov and Turgenev and a lot of American literature, which I'd read before and I was rereading now, Saul Bellow and Updike and Bernard Malamud, John Cheever. All of this made me start to think about how I enjoyed writing the assignments and how I might enjoy doing creative writing. But of course, that was too exalted a thought, and it was just wishful thinking, I thought. When I was in my third or fourth year of university, still evening classes, of course, because I was still working full-time at the bank, there was an announcement in a campus newspaper about a short story competition. So I did write my first short story for that competition, enjoyed the process immensely, sent it in, and it won first prize.
Was that the first short story you'd ever written?
Yeah, it was. Well, I thought a lucky fluke. But I did keep writing, and the following year, when the contest was announced again, I sent in another story, and it won first prize again. So now I had to take it more seriously, that two lucky flukes in a row. Perhaps there's more than that. And since I was enjoying the process so much, I continued to write. I got a grant from the Canada Council for the Arts, which allowed me to give up my banking job and write full-time, and I managed to complete a short story collection. And the rest, I think you know.
What did you enjoy, or what do you enjoy so much about the process?
I think first, a writer has to enjoy solitude. And I enjoy solitude. I enjoy being alone in a room, working with words and sentences, putting them together. The sheer craft of stringing one word after another, one sentence after another, is something one has to enjoy if one wants to write. And then I think I enjoy the dreaming that it allows me to do, which again I suppose is tied up with solitude. Solitude encourages dreaming. And the making of the book itself, the craft of it, yeah, I have to say I enjoy that.
By craft, you mean figuring out a plot line and breaking it down into scenes?
That too, creating characters, being the puppet master, being the god for each book. I mean, it's creation. It's within the covers of the book, of course. And it's what I also like about it is that one has to learn the art of writing over again each time. At least for me, that's how it works. Each time I start a new novel, I learn once again how to write. And by that, I think I mean writing that particular story.
Well, Rohit and Mistry, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk today.
It's been a pleasure.
Rohit and Mistry's book is Family Matters. This is Fresh Air.